Hello, this is Lila Friedland, and you are listening to Who Cares? A low-key deep dive into the stuff people care about. Today you'll hear Eva Celina, founder of the Driftwood Chorus, talk about singing and how she found herself as an eight-year-old channeling microtonal stories from far away and long ago.
People who are told that they can't sing.
Oh, yeah.
And then...
Oh, yes. This is what I wanted to say. Yoga. Om. Yesterday and last week, I went to a yoga class. It was a kind of a small group. And it was... There was a man who was behind me practicing. And we would chant Om three times, and every time I observed the same thing happen with him. He started out, he was with us, and then it's like something in his mind engaged, and he would shift away from the pitch where everybody else was and kind of falter, and like 3 seconds later, he would just have dropped out. And it was happened the same way 3 times in a row last Monday and yesterday. And I just was sitting there thinking, like kind of holding that and thinking, what's going on in his brain?
In his brain. Because it's the mind.
It's totally his brain. If something is happening and saying like, nope, that's not it. Or no. Or you're in a, maybe your voice is because he's the only male-bodied person in the room and he doesn't want to either take up the space, or he's insecure, or he's like, this can't judge his volume, or it doesn't feel right. Or it's like, but it was just, I would watch it start out okay and so quickly decay. Like, I almost want to like just reach across and like hold his hand and be like, you're good, like stay in it, just stay in it. And I think that's the one thing that I've noticed the most in teaching people who have struggle with either matching pitch or staying with is it like starts out okay and then the brain just comes in and just cuts it off.
Derails.
Major hole, you know, kind of black holes in terms of my own, where I can fall into my own insecurity. And I try to be really open with that as a choir director, because I'm not a choir director. I'm not a trained Western musician. You know, my ability to read music is sketchy at best. I learned by ear the majority of my life. And I also sang, you know, in stuff that was microtonal without even realizing stuff was microtonal. I sang weird rhythms, odd modes. And
what do you mean, you know, when you say microtonal?
Spaces in between, you know, spaces in between the notes. So we have like the tempered, you know, we have the scale that we play on the piano, and those are very set distances between pitches, but you know, there are all sorts of, there's a whole spectrum in between, the whole spectrum of sound. And in the Balkans, you know, the Ottoman Empire was in various parts of the Balkans to varying degrees over like, what, 500 years or something. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of residue from that time in musical culture. I mean, not only, obviously, like all language and art and food and et cetera, and trauma and... healing, what would I sing? Or if you needed healing, what would I suggest that you sing? And I just have been coming back to humming as this kind of like somatic, really deep somatic thing that I actually try not to talk about too much, because I don't want people to then get in their brain of like, okay, now I'm going to have a somatic experience. You know, I want to think about this is going to be meaningful. And you just have to get out of the way and let it be meaningful. But that idea of humming in terms of moving the vibration into your body and not having it be a performative thing is just gonna, like any yoga pose would, it'll show you where you're holding what.
Hmm.
Where's the tension? But also, where's the pleasure?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if singing can be an act of a pleasurable experience, that the feeling of one's own voice making sound brings pleasure into the body, then it's just undeniably healing. Because of course, like, we think about, like, okay, singing as a way to, like, get stuff out that's, like, more abstract or, like, can't be necessarily fixed with spoken language. It's kind of like, it's like the added value. It's like, okay, well, we have the text, which you may or may not agree with or resonate with, but then you have this whole other thing, which is, like, emotional and very up to interpretation, so you can have your own private experience and people won't necessarily even know what it is that you're singing about. And I love that. Like, I love that fact that I can, I think I kind of like to hide behind languages that people don't speak or understand, because they're less likely to create a direct mythology based on the lyrics about, like, me or, like, what is this? I mean, I don't write my own songs, so I've already, like, taken one step into privacy in terms of how I'm expressing my emotions through the songs. I'm not, like, people aren't saying, oh, is she writing about her own life? You know, like, there's, that's not happening. But I have, like, a layer of protection through language. And then, additionally, I have whatever I want to say through the melody that's my own private thing. And I feel like if we give ourselves permission to have these kind of private experiences within, because singing is so vulnerable and it's so emotional and it's like literally the body sounding, but that, like, there's this thing that you can kind of do. Like, I did that for years. I had no idea what I was singing about when I was a kid. I'd be singing all these other languages and I would just go based on what the melody made me feel. So I was really lucky that Ruth, my first teacher, had she had really great taste in music. She still does. And so some of the songs that she brought me are, like, my most enduring favorites, songs that I learned when I was 8 from her. I think when I was little, what I still respond to now is the way that in folk music, sometimes there's just multiple emotions existing at the same time that you might feel are in conflict. But in the song, they're not. In the song, you can be kind of straining for something that you love and or that you've lost, and then it's still a song for dancing. It's not totally unique to these traditions. You know, there's a lot of that in a lot of American string band traditions where there's, like, it's fast paced and it's uplifting, but it's also very mournful.
Thanks for listening to Who Cares? I'm Lila Friedland, and I was talking with Eva Salina, founder of the Driftwood Chorus. I'll put credits for the music that you just heard on my Instagram, invisible @Eva_Hand. And you can find Eva at evaselina.com. EVASALINA.